This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Copper, its use and prevalence in our lives is astounding, as is the price we pay for mining the metal that we rely on. That's what my next guest discovered when he moved to Bisbee, Arizona, a town with a century of copper mining history. Bill Carter unwittingly found himself directly affected by the mining industry in his adopted hometown. That, in turn, led to his book, Boom Bust Boom, a story about copper, the metal that runs the world. Bill Carter, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Tell us, why is copper, as you call it, the metal that runs the world?
Yeah, you know, when I first started writing the book, like most people, you know, we hear more about gold or aluminum or iron ore, and they get more of the headlines. But truthfully, copper is the thing that all of us are using on a constant daily basis, whether it's plumbing in your house, so it's hidden behind your walls, or whether it's in your car, your computer, your watch, your anything that's electric has copper in it. And the amount of copper in our homes, 400 pounds of copper in our homes, on an airplane, 9,000 pounds, in a car, 50 pounds. It's kind of this invisible metal. It's not invisible, but it's something we don't look at. It really is what we would call running modern civilization. Copper really took off when electricity was found, and we've never looked back. I mean, people have tried to replace it with other things, primarily aluminum, but that was a disaster when homes were burning down because it's not a very good conductor of heat. So it's kind of, you know, built into the machinery of what we call modern civilization.
And as you point out in your book, Boom, Bust, Boom, there's absolutely no way we could back off from our consumption of copper and our use of copper and continue in any way, shape, or form the lives that we all take for granted.
Yeah, the only thing we can do is create a new technology, and they are working on that. There's some breakthroughs, maybe graphene. That's a new product that might be an answer. Right now it's not, but it could. There are people trying. Copper as a metal is an absolutely phenomenal thing. It's kind of this own little creature of how it behaves. It's kind of amazing. It has incredible properties of antibacterial. It has, you know, conducting heat, electricity. You can bend it, but then it gets hard if you don't touch it, so you can bend it like a plumber can. It's kind of an amazing metal. It's been used by humans for about 10,000 years. It's kind of irreplaceable at the moment, but that doesn't mean in the future it won't.
But when you decided to move to Bisbee, copper really wasn't on your mind, right? And how aware were you of the mining history in Bisbee?
No, you know, we're all very, in some ways, very simple creatures, aren't we? I moved to Bisbee because I liked the town. I liked the way aesthetically how it looked. I liked the people I met. It's very creative. It's turned into kind of a artist colony, a very eclectic town. And it's very unique architecture that was built by the mining community. But the mine itself, which is a huge open pit about a half mile from my house, I just kind of ignored it, like we tend to do. We were very good about that kind of stuff. We're good about ignoring these things that might be bad. And I just ignored it and thought it was a kind of an interesting history. And then I realized that Southern Arizona has 10 super mines. It's one of the biggest copper belts on the planet. I was living right square, at the, you know, kind of the bottom right of it. I didn't really think about that. And most people I know in Arizona don't think about it. It's not something you think about, but it's an active, huge industry in this state.
And then you planted a garden in your backyard.
I did. I planted a garden. I had my first daughter. She's about two at the time. And my wife was pregnant with our second daughter. And I've always been a gardener, so I was really, really involved in redoing the drip system, stirring up the dirt, and just really kind of going for it. That went on for quite a while, and then everything started to grow, and then I started to eat it. My wife wouldn't eat it because I think it's a mother's instinct. She just didn't trust the dirt because it was an old copper mining town. I thought, oh, come on. I grew this. It's okay. I ended up becoming very ill, and I had high levels of arsenic and lead. And then the mining company, just coincidentally at that time, was starting to reclaim properties and test the soil. And if they were polluted, they would change the soil. So we applied. And they showed high levels of arsenic and lead.
That must have been just a stunning moment for you as a husband and as a dad.
It was overwhelming. It freaked us out. We felt suddenly trapped in this house that we loved and town that we loved, and very concerned about, you know, okay, they're testing that on my soil. That's what they found in my soil. So you have to assume it's on everybody's soil, and it's on every single thing around this entire town. And in fact, it is. They've replaced in the last 5 years almost every single house's topsoil, every park, every school's yards. Everything's been replaced. It's still going on now to about $70 million now of replacing all the soil because all of it is heavy arsenic and heavy lead. And that did not come from anything that happened during the open pit phase. What it came from primarily was from the smelter that used to be in Bisbee. That was something that if you live around a smelter, it's spewing out heavy metals. The point, though, is that freaked me out as a parent and as a resident and as a citizen, as a human being, was these metals that we don't see, they don't go away. You know, once we dig them up and they just disappear, we think, oh, you know, they're kind of gone. They're not gone. They don't go away for thousands of years or ever. They just kind of settle back in the dirt that you will eat or you will sniff or you will be part of. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind whenever a copper mine's coming to town, is that it is going to pollute your area, whether you like it or not, or whether they're very good at their job or not. It's going to happen. And it's a matter of degree of how bad it is.
I'm speaking with Bill Carter, whose book, Boom Bust Boom, A Story About Copper, the Metal That Runs the World, really came out of his firsthand exposure to the effects of the copper mine and the smelting operation in his adopted hometown of Bisbee, Arizona. How did that whole experience, Bill, launch you into this incredibly deep dive, exhaustive look into our relationship with copper?
That's kind of who I am. I tend to suddenly be part of whatever life I'm in, and then I realize something about it's amazing I didn't know about, and then I started to research it and write a book. I mean, I've written other books in that same way. As I started to research it, it was blowing my mind. Every aspect of copper was blowing my mind, which I love, and so that really took me deeper into this. And you know, it's one of those things that we don't think about. We do not think about something like copper, but everything from its history to the people who run the show to the families that have run it in the past in America and where it is now, and also how environmentally destructive it is to our communities, but how much we are trapped by the fact that we need it. All of it was totally fascinating to me.
Well, we have certainly seen in our state of Michigan how copper can be such a driver to the economy, since the Upper Peninsula once produced nearly all of America's copper. And Michigan's history or its influence is really seen in Arizona's copper industry still, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of towns here are named after towns in Michigan. A lot of the companies that eventually started Arizona copper industry, almost all of them came from Michigan. What happened is, you know, Michigan was the home of the largest native copper found on Earth. We had a huge native copper, which is really what that means, is like finding huge nuggets of copper, pure copper. But, you know, anything like that, it's going to be exhausted really fast. Same with gold, because it's just sitting there. Once that went away, the people who made all the money in Michigan needed a place to go, and Arizona started, and it had longer, deeper veins. Not as pure by any means as Michigan, but something you could sustain 100 years or more, longer. Now we're into our second century of copper. So a lot of those companies moved out to Arizona.
But just like we've seen in Michigan and you've discovered in Arizona, the toll that these copper mines takes, not only on the earth, but on the people who work in the mines and live around them, is, as you spell out in your book, it's mind-blowing.
This whole myth, there's a lot of, I guess the best word maybe is nostalgia. You know, people grew up in mining towns. There's plenty of examples of people in Michigan and Arizona. And they have a pretty good life, at least the way they advertise it, like from the 60s or 70s. But there's a couple things to remember. One, they had unions back then that were very powerful. In Arizona, the unions were broken in the mid-80s. Before that, the unions had enough power to kind of create a better life. Now, that doesn't happen. There are no unions. You're just a day worker being pushed as hard as you can. You have no guarantee of employment, per se. You know, if it's a company town, they give you a house for very cheap. But as soon as the market drops by a little bit, bam, you have to get out of the house. So the whole, I grew up in this town, and it's really wonderful, and it's a great thing. That might be true. It might be true, and I'm glad. But the truth is, the boom, bust, boom cycle, right? Michigan's a perfect example. You had a boom that was monstrous in the 1800s. You had a bust, and the Upper Peninsula has been busted for a very long time. And you're getting a little tiny taste of a reboom. But let's just be very clear. Those companies will come, they will take what they need to take, and then they will leave. And those towns, if you rely on that one industry to somehow build your town, you will go bust. And then you will have nothing. In Upper Minnesota, where I went, they're trying to put a mine near the Boundary Waters, which is kind of a precious resource of Minnesota and the nation. And there's a lot of jobs based on, let's call it, eco-tourism. canoeing, lodging, fishing, things like that. Almost thousands of jobs around that area doing that. So when a mining company says, we're going to give you 300 jobs, you have to ask yourself, okay, it's 300 jobs. That's nice. It's going to be kind of mid-range pay, but no one's going to come here anymore if there's a copper mine. If you have a massive copper mine, you don't have tourism. They don't go hand in hand unless it's like a mine tour. I'm a little worried about these places that are thinking that this is going to be the salvation, when sometimes when they leave, they pull the rug out and you are left with more debts, an environmental cleanup that they suddenly can't pay for. And that's what I worry about with these communities. If you know what you're up against and you know who you're in business with and you can hold them to the fire for long-term projects or long-term environmental bonds, okay, maybe it works. Maybe it works and maybe it's worth it. I don't know. It's up to the communities.
Well, in fact, here in Michigan, as you talk about this kind of little resurgence in the Midwest, we've got a Canadian company, Highland Copper Company, planning a new mine at White Pine. It's just a few miles from Lake Superior. And you can certainly find people in the area who welcome the economic boost because they've been in the dumps since the mines closed in 1995. And then you find those who say, hold off a minute, this is a big step backward. And this really does seem to be the same dialogue wherever mines are proposed. And there really isn't an answer, is there?
It's a really tricky philosophical question because I understand the need. It's very obvious. Hey, this is going to give us some money. I get it. Because, you know, mining companies usually put money to the schools or to the town or, you know, whatever. Plus, there's the jobs. But when I go to these towns, I'm like, okay, if that happens, okay, great. But you need to be proactive in creating a second track because they are going to leave. They are going to walk away and forget your name. You know what I mean? People are disillusioned by the nice guy that comes to town. The nice guy that comes to town from the copper company is hired by the copper company to be nice and go to your town and talk nice and go to town halls and create, you know, maps and graphs that all look fantastic. That's what he's paid for. You're not getting the CEO, the shareholders, or the people that are just going to ruthlessly turn on it and say, I don't know, where is that again? We're done. Forget it. Let's move to Chile. You know, you need to understand the people you're dealing with. You have to really, really be clear as a community to hold them to the highest standards of partnerships, but also environmental thresholds of what they can and cannot do.
But Bill, in your book, in Boom, Boss, Boom, you actually lay out a challenge really for all of us. You really do a great job of pointing out this central struggle that, hey, we want these products that the copper gives us. We want our cars and our cell phones and our electricity and our water piping and our computer. But it's tough for us to think about the fact that we are part of this equation and the consequences that copper mining leaves for the people and places.
It's the basic underlying conflict of my book for me personally. In my book, I'm exploring also a large-scale proposed mine in Alaska called Pebble Mine. And I used to be a commercial fisherman up in Bristol Bay, so I have a vested interest in seeing that fishery, which is the world's largest salmon fishery, survive. I already know, obviously, if you build an open pit mine, you're going to kill the fishery. If you think you aren't, you're not on reality. And I made this decision to put myself kind of behind my own words. Bisbee, Arizona was created by a mine. Bisbee is located in an extremely strange two canyons, unlivable in some ways. So the only reason it was built was because of the mine. And I know that. If they were to hypothetically open that mine again, I would be hard-pressed to protest it. But I would put everything I have in my life to fight Pebble Mine because they have never built a mine there, and I know what it will do. So, you know, I kind of made this decision, like, I do want the products, but if they want to do it in Bisbee, I understand. It's a mining community that, you know, was a mine, now it's a mine again. I'm not going to fight that, but I'm going to fight against Pebble. So I kind of made that decision in my own, and I think people have to make those decisions around the country, but it's a really hard one. It's like iPhones. You know, we find out eventually that they have a factory of 500,000 people in China when some of it's, you know, really bad conditions, but yet I still have an iPhone. This is the hypocritical aspect of being a human being right now in the world. Our products come from somewhere in Africa. We don't know what the heck's going on. You know, if you want to really dig into copper, you know, go to Africa. China is absolutely taking over Africa to get their copper, their oil, their food, their lumber. I mean, it is unreal. When you stare at that copper mine, it's just part of a global system that we are all part of. And this has to go with, do we want to recycle? Do we want to, you know, kind of live as less footprint of a creature? To get really unscientific about it, it's like, you know, that whole thing where we're the cockroaches. You know, we are just eating up the world. We are. We are just devouring this planet. I only hope that we can figure out a way to do it better. Otherwise, we're going to kind of eat ourselves up.
And taking it back to an extremely personal level, you and your wife wrestled and wrestled with whether or not to leave Bisbee, but you ultimately did.
That's right. We did wrestle because we absolutely love that town. We have so many dear friends there, and we go back and visit. It's a magical place. It was the best place I ever lived in the United States. But I don't want to raise my kids in a place that I can't really kind of trust, not the people, but the environment. If I knowingly know that this is going to be potentially hazardous, why would I stay unless I'm trapped? So I left. It wasn't that I preached anything on the way out. I just left. It was my decision. You know, I wasn't holding some sort of protest downtown. That was our decision, and we stuck with it. I mean, everywhere you move is going to have something. I know that. You know, if you go to L.A., you're going to choke on smog. You know, everywhere has got something, but sometimes you can choose something that has a little less, and that's what we did.
Great food for thought as we contemplate a resurgence of the copper mining industry in the Midwest, including in the Upper Peninsula again. The book is Boom, Bust, Boom, A Story About Copper, the Metal That Runs the World. Bill Carter, really enjoyed the book and really enjoyed talking with you today. Thank you.
Thank you so much.